This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Who done it? At the Times. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Thursday, September 6th. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The White House and all of Washington, D.C. are trying to figure out who wrote an anonymous op-ed in the New York Times blasting President Trump.
Democrats continue efforts to stall the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court.
A large earthquake struck northern Japan in the middle of the night with deadly results. An effort is underway to rescue people trapped in their homes.
And how the end of the manual transmission has arrived.
I think that automatic transmissions have improved to the point now where they're essentially as good as manual transmissions, or sometimes even better in terms of both performance and fuel efficiency. Also, the cost reasons aren't really there anymore. You're not going to get a big break if you buy a manual transmission car.
Nathan Bomey at USA Today on how America lost its love for the stick shift. He's here in about 20 minutes. Who wrote it? That's the question consuming Washington insiders right now. An opinion piece in the New York Times claims to have been written by an anonymous senior administration official who's part of a resistance working, quote, from within to thwart President Trump's worst inclinations, as it says. In an extraordinary move, a furious Mr. Trump tweeted a demand last night that if, quote, the gutless, anonymous person does indeed exist, the Times must, for national security purposes, turn him or her over to the government at once. He lashed out at the Times during an unrelated event at the White House.
So if the failing New York Times has an anonymous editorial, can you believe it? Anonymous, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial. We're doing a great job.
The author, claiming to be working diligently from within the administration, said, quote, many Trump appointees have vowed to do what we can to preserve our democratic institutions while thwarting Mr. Trump's more misguided impulses until he is out of office. The confirmation hearing for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh turned tense again late yesterday, with Democrats lining up to hammer him. In one exchange, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker implied Judge Kavanaugh had been open to racial profiling tactics, citing an email. However, Mr. Booker did not provide Mr. Kavanaugh with that email.
The Supreme Court law, I know what the precedent is. I know what the law is. I'm asking what you believe. Do you agree with Scalia that, again, that it is never permissible for government to use race to try to remediate past discrimination to try to achieve justice, that that's racial entitlement?
That position has never been adopted.
Meanwhile, in an opinion piece, The Hill says it's, quote, time to confirm Brett Kavanaugh and free the nation of regulations. It argues that the stifling regulations, many imposed unilaterally by the Obama administration, have caused uncertainty and instability here at home. The Hill goes on to say that the antics during the hearings show the Democrats in their opposition to Mr. Kavanaugh have no substance. Well, the Kavanaugh hearings are ugly. There's no arguing that. Democrats are trying to end the hearing before it gets started. There are repeated interruptions by protesters, as you've seen. Republicans are accusing Democrats of the equivalent of contempt of court and accusing protesters of mob rule. And in the middle of all this, one senator on the Judiciary Committee delivered a compelling theory about why everything about this Kavanaugh hearing is a mess, and that's Nebraska GOP Senator Ben Sasse. It's a story by Amber Phillips, reporter for The Fix political blog at The Washington Post. Amber set this up.
An interesting take. It was something that we weren't expecting because this happened in the middle of the opening statements. And what Ben Sasse did, a Republican from Nebraska, rather than use this opportunity to talk about the actual nominee before him, was why these hearings have become so partisan. This week, these hearings have become particularly partisan, with Democrats trying to stop the hearing before it even got started and Republicans accusing them of mob rule. Sasse's point was that people are putting out all their frustrations on the Supreme Court and courts in general because Congress isn't really doing its job. Congress is shying away from really tough political decisions and tough votes that could cost lawmakers to lose their jobs. And so that gets passed on to the executive branch to kind of make rules, and then people sue the executive branch, and then that ends up in the courts. And here we are with an extremely partisan Supreme Court nominee process that is only getting more and more partisan with each nominee, it feels like.
Yeah. So it's not the first time, obviously, we've heard a lawmaker say that Congress isn't doing its job. Does he have proposed solutions here for getting past this?
Right, and not really, and I think that's where some of his critics could argue that this interesting and compelling theory really rings a bit hollow, because it's pretty easy to say, Congress, do your job when the cameras are rolling, but lawmakers who are involved in discussions, say, on how much authorization of military force to give presidents, tell me that it's really, really, really difficult to make those kinds of decisions and come to a consensus. So Ben Sasse's broader solution to all of this was just for lawmakers to be willing to lose their jobs in order to take tough votes. But you could argue that ignores the way our political system is set up, where, you know, you will get punished by the voters if they don't like what you did.
Yeah. We're speaking with Amber Phillips, Washington Post reporter for the Fix Politics blog, and she's written a piece about Senator Ben Sasse's comments. He's the lawmaker from Nebraska. He said Congress has decided to self-neuter in trying to explain why the Kavanaugh hearings are so ugly. What were some of the other takeaways here?
Well, some of the takeaways I thought were in applying Sasse's kind of law school-esque theories about why Congress isn't working and why Supreme Court battles are so political, to what we've seen in the Trump administration, and that is that courts have played an especially outsized role in Trump's White House. For example, when the president rolled out his most controversial policies, like a travel ban separating immigrant families at the border or banning transgender people from the military, these aren't issues that Congress takes up, even though they could, and even though even Republican lawmakers disagree with many of them. Instead, they're rolled out unilaterally by the White House and challenged by Democratic attorneys general, and those end up in court. And then we have, you know, we saw the travel ban, a one-year, year-and-a-half battle in the courts that Trump ultimately largely won, but it left this policy in legal limbo for a long time. And I thought that was very interesting to look at Sasse's assessment that the courts are basically playing a bigger and bigger role in our political system, and apply it to the Trump era. And I think there he's certainly spot on.
The votes are there for Brett Kavanaugh?
They should be. I'm watching very closely in the full Senate. These aren't members on the committee right now overseeing Kavanaugh's hearing. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, two moderate Republican senators who are hesitant that Kavanaugh could be a part of a court that overturns the legalization of abortion. They since have given hints that they feel like Kavanaugh won't do that. And so it does look like he will scrape by on pretty much a partisan line vote, both in the committee and in the full Senate, and get all the way to the Supreme Court.
Thanks, Amber. Amber Phillips, reporter for The Fix, political blog at The Washington Post. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. During Dell's annual sale, Dell Small Business is offering up to 40% off select PCs with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he plans to gather state attorneys general this month to examine what the Justice Department called the intentional stifling of voices on social media. Meanwhile, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey testified before a House committee yesterday to answer questions about social media and foreign election interference and alleged pro-liberal bias on platforms.
Looking at the data, we analyzed tweets sent by all members of the House and Senate and found no statistically significant difference between the number of times a tweet by a Democrat is viewed versus a Republican, even after all of our ranking and filtering of tweets has been applied.
Meanwhile, Mr. Dorsey acknowledged that it took the company too long to take down a doctored image of Meghan McCain that was tweeted as her father was being memorialized. It appeared to threaten to shoot Ms. McCain as she wept over her father's casket. Mr. Dorsey said, "We did take too many hours to act." It's 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, an opinion piece in the New York Times by an anonymous senior administration official claiming to be part of a resistance working from within to thwart President Trump's worst inclinations has set off a wild guessing game inside and outside the White House on the author's identity. A furious Trump tweeted a demand last night that if the gutless anonymous person does indeed exist, the Times must, for national security purposes, turn him, her, over to the government at once.
We have somebody in what I call the failing New York Times that's talking about he's part of the resistance within the Trump administration. This is what we have to deal with.
The piece comes a day after excerpts of Bob Woodward's book on the Trump White House suggest his top officials have been engaged in moves designed to protect the nation from the president. Pressured by Democrats, Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh rejected repeated requests at yesterday's Senate confirmation hearing to reveal his views about a president pardoning himself or being forced to testify in a criminal case. He was asked by California Senator Dianne Feinstein if a sitting president should be required to respond to a subpoena.
Going with the Justice Ginsburg principle, which is really not the Justice Ginsburg alone principle, it's everyone's principle on the current Supreme Court. And as a matter of the canons of judicial independence, I can't give you an answer on that hypothetical question.
The hearing went on until 10 last night. Rescuers are rushing to unearth survivors and restore power after a powerful earthquake jolted Japan's northernmost main island of Hokkaido, buckling roads, knocking homes off their foundations and causing entire hillsides to collapse. And there have been casualties from the 6.7 magnitude quake, and at least 3 million households are without power. Good news, if you're an NFL fan, it's going to be much easier to watch games online this year. The league is finally dropping a requirement that viewers sign in with a cable or satellite subscription. To watch on a big TV, you'll still need a cable or satellite subscription or one through a cable-like online package. The NFL season kicks off tonight with the Eagles hosting the Falcons.
It's about time. It's been a long wait.
You ready?
Yeah, you know,
it's fall. It's only 105 degrees here with humidity of 98%. Should be fun.
Perfect football weather. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. The popularity of cars and trucks with manual transmissions is falling sharply as fewer Americans learn how to drive them and automakers avoid making them. It appears the end of the stick shift is upon us. More from Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. Nathan, what's up here?
Well, I think the stick shift is probably on his deathbed. It may not go away right away, but it's certainly not in good shape. You know, the automatic transmission has improved dramatically over the last few decades, and people just aren't interested in manual transmissions anymore.
How come?
I mean, I think that this is a convenience factor. I think that automatic transmissions have improved to the point now where they're essentially as good as manual transmissions or sometimes even better in terms of both performance and fuel efficiency. Also, the cost reasons aren't really there anymore. You're not going to get a big break if you buy a manual transmission car. So I think that that's a factor too. And, you know, ultimately also the automakers just aren't going to make these if people aren't going to buy them. So they're getting much harder to find.
Wow. Not to sound smart alecky, but how much of a role is the fact that we do things in our cars with our hands that we shouldn't be doing, like texting or eating or applying makeup, and we need our hands to be free for that?
Well, I know we live in a busy, always going on culture, and so I'm not surprised if that's a factor. I don't know that it was a leading factor, if only because this trend has been going down for a while.
Okay.
And, you know, the manual transmission vehicles now are about 3% of sales. And, of course, you know, there was a time when that's all you could get. So this has definitely been in the making for quite some time.
All right. So Audi has flat out and come out and said no more manuals, no more stick shifts with the 2019 model year. Is this considered a bold statement or a statement that's long overdue? How do you see it?
I think it's a big step. I think it's pretty surprising as well for a company that prides itself, you know, German engineering, luxury cars from Europe that, you know, has always had this type of option in its lineup. They're just saying we don't think it's worth it anymore, and people aren't demanding it. And so with Audi taking that step, I wouldn't be surprised to see the dominoes begin to fall and to see others do so as well. In fact, I spoke to IHS Market, which is an analyst group, and they've got a forecast that says, you know, manuals could get down to maybe 2% of the market within a few years, but they're saying they already feel like that's not aggressive enough, that it'll probably be even lower. I mean, I even talked to a customer who had to get one sent in from out of state because it's just so hard to find now.
No kidding. Oh, we're speaking with Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today, about his piece about how America has lost its love for the stick shift. If you really love these, if you're an avid fan, and we know they're out there, can you request one?
You can. You certainly can. And there are vehicles that are still offering it, you know, the Chevy Cruze or Jeep Wrangler, for example. You know, Jeep is definitely still a brand where you can probably find one if you want to, but you may need to custom order it. And this is a lot of times, I think a lot of folks who are looking for one are going to the used market now. And obviously, if you are willing to go back pretty far, you can get a manual transmission a little bit easily. Part of the problem, though, is the residual values on these vehicles drop pretty quickly. So the dealers know that they're not going to be able to resell them for very much because there aren't many people out there who can buy, or are interested. And the other issue, of course, is simply not as many people now who know how to do it. You know, kids don't grow up necessarily knowing how to drive one because their parents don't have one in the driveway, and that naturally means the demand is dropping like a rock.
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Bomey, business reporter at USA Today. The end of the stick shift has arrived. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Catch America's First News online anytime at ThisMorningWithGordonDeal.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, September 6. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Washington tries to figure out who wrote a scathing and anonymous New York Times editorial about President Trump. We'll see if there's a third day today of protests during confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Deadly earthquake hits Japan. Wall Street Journal says the best colleges are Harvard, MIT, Yale, Columbia, and the California Institute of Technology. And the team we're turning to for the most fantasy football picks. That story in about 20 minutes. Conservative backlash to Nike's Just Do It advertising campaign featuring Colin Kaepernick, the face of NFL protests against police brutality, may undermine the sportswear maker's efforts to grow sales in the U.S. or do just the opposite. Analysis from James Langford, business editor at the Washington Examiner. James, is this about dollars more so than a social issue?
I think that's a safe bet. It definitely sees dollar signs here. This is clearly a way to appeal to a very big audience, that being the millennial audience. These are the people who were born between 1980 and 2000, and there are roughly 92 million of them. So it's a huge generation. It's the biggest in U.S. history, and this is a group that surveys and studies have shown is willing to base buying decisions on company values, which is somewhat dissimilar from the 1980s when I grew up.
Yeah.
It really didn't matter what the companies you were buying did, just as long as you looked good in them or had the right logos.
So, as you point out, too, Nike is not afraid of controversy. Explain that.
Nike did a campaign a couple of years ago with Tiger Woods, basically saying that winning makes up for everything. And this was before his most recent DUI troubles, but after the breakup of his marriage, the affairs with the porn stars, and the incident back in 2009 when his wife chased him out of the house with a golf club, which was a big shock at the time to everyone and got tons of media coverage. So coming back with this campaign, you know, just 4 years later that says, hey, winning makes up for everything, it's not a, you know, slogan that went down, you know, well in all quarters. In that situation, it was more of a liberal backlash than a conservative backlash, but backlash nonetheless. Mm. Nike likes edge.
We're speaking with James Langford, business editor at the Washington Examiner. and he's written a piece about the new Colin Kaepernick campaign with Nike. You pointed out, too, that some of the backlash in this case included people kind of burning their Nike stuff and things like that. How much of an impact is Nike bracing for, if any? Do we know?
We don't have a really good sense of how much impact Nike expects from this. My guess would be not much. If they expected enough to like fully offset whatever gain they would get from it, they wouldn't have done it. The analysts and the PR experts I talked to said that Nike has a history of this. You know, they know full well that how much they sell really depends on perception of the brand. So they try to keep it edgy, and they try not to like go so far that they would really lose buyers. Yeah. I mean, obviously, in this case, the interesting thing about it is the people who are burning the Nike shoes and the Nike socks and the Nike t-shirts, they already bought it. So Nike already has that money.
Right, right. Do the comparison that you explained with Dick's Sporting Goods and their ban of the sale of assault weapons.
They pulled back on sales of assault rifles, said they weren't going to do that anymore. And then they also said they weren't going to sell to people over 21. And that did spark a backlash. You know, in the most recent quarter, they're, you know, hunting unit, which includes those kinds of weapons, was kind of struggling. And it sort of went at odds with what the CEO had said at the time, that he expected to, you know, pick up new customers. Now, it might be a situation where, you know, a conservative backlash would have more effect against Dick's, because the people buying weapons you would stereotypically tend to think of as being more conservative. And the liberals who might be supporting what Dick's did wouldn't have been that likely to buy, you know, assault rifles or other weapons, or as likely as conservatives would have in the first place. So that may have been a factor.
Yeah.
Or it may be that, you know, Dick's just, you know, miscalculated and Nike could face the same thing.
How about Nike's partnership with the NFL and being a uniform provider? Any controversy with doing this deal with Colin Kaepernick?
You know, you would expect that would put some pressure on the NFL, and the NFL might not like it. I imagine, on the other hand, that as long as, you know, the NFL is buying that, Nike is saying, well, we're getting publicity, and the NFL is getting, you know, some attention, which might make some of the viewers that dropped off in the last year or two come back. You know, some people might tune in just to see what the players are going to do beforehand.
Thanks, James. James Lankford, business editor at the Washington Examiner. Meanwhile, Nike appears to be doubling down on its decision to make Mr. Kaepernick a face of its Just Do It campaign, as the TV ad will play during the NFL's regular season kickoff game tonight between the Falcons and Eagles. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday Eve. Welcome aboard. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, as the last of the nation's students are going back to school this week, some people just don't know how to handle it. And we're not talking about their parents. A homeowner in Sandston, Virginia, tired of students coming onto his property while they're waiting in a nearby bus stop, chose to erect an electrified fence to ensure they would get the message. According to Fox News, the fence separates the man's front yard from a school bus stop. He took the measure because he claims simple no trespassing signs just don't do the trick, and he winds up picking up trash every day. As you might expect, when many children were waiting to take the bus to the first day of school, people began to raise concerns. One neighborhood resident told local TV that he actually touched the fence, which doesn't sound like the smartest idea, but he indeed got a slight shock from it. After calls to the police, the man was told to remove the fence because it was technically placed on county property. However, he can reinstate the fence as long as it stays on his property line.
Wow, so somebody actually had to come out and measure it.
Yes.
And say, you're too far. Wow.
Yeah, that might be a little bit extreme.
I can sense his frustration.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yes.
Where are the parents?
Right.
First of all.
Yeah.
Did he not have a conversation with the kids, too? Like,
yeah.
Hey, guys, would you mind?
It seems that he has tried, or at least he claims that he has tried.
Okay.
Right. He's tried to reason with them. He's tried to put up signs. He's tried his best to not have to take this kind of extreme measure.
Mm.
But I guess it's come to this now. So I guess maybe they'll be waiting on the other side of the street from now on. I don't know.
How about just a speaker that blares I don't know, maybe music they don't like?
Right.
Or gunfire?
Right. Oh, boy.
How about that, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah.
That'd be scary.
Yeah, more than a few calls to the cops after that,
yeah, I'm sure.
I would think. And what would you do for free pizza for life? Would you permanently mark your body with the Domino's logo? If you're shaking your head no, you're apparently in the minority. Domino's Pizza in Russia was forced to end a promotion offering fans free pizza for life if they got the brand's logo tattooed in a prominent place on their body after the campaign became too popular. The promotion was originally advertised to run for 2 months, starting August 31st, but the pizza chain ended it only 5 days in after their social media was flooded with excited pizza fanatics all proudly displaying their Domino's tattoos.
Wow.
The advertisement promised up to 100 free Domino's pizzas every year for 100 years to anyone who got a tattoo of the company's logo, posted the photo to social media, and proved the authenticity of the ink. The company clearly was not expecting so many fans to go under the needle for free pizza, and they ended the promotion Tuesday, announcing that only the first 350 people with tattoos will be awarded the special lifetime deal.
That's unbelievable.
Five days in.
That's like two pizzas a week.
Yeah. I think if they had done this, I don't know, say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they might have held, you know, it might have been a little more resistance. But now, I mean, people get tattoos, you know, there's some of these folks who were doing this probably, you know, they were going to get a tattoo anyway that day. You know what I mean?
So they
just, you know, figured they'd add another one on.
Wow. I would consider that the local Chinese joint near me. Lucky yes. Star?
Right.
Oh, I might.
I know you're
maybe
a fan.
On the inner forearm,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, and for that, I mean, you just might need a star or something, right? It might not even need to be a big corporate logo, you know.
Boy.
Just something that's a lucky star with a star on it.
I'm just thinking right now of like 100 meals of happy family with a side of wonton soup 100 times a year.
Know where you're going after this.
13 minutes after the hour. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday. Consider this the next time you're at the airport. New research finds that there's one place to avoid at the airport if you want to keep yourself from getting sick. The plastic trays at security that you put stuff into before being scanned. In a new study by pandemic experts, those trays have been found to harbor the highest levels of viruses at airports, more so than toilets. The study is from the University of Nottingham and the Finnish National Institute for Health and Welfare. Researchers swabbed a variety of surfaces at Helsinki-Vantaa Airport in the winter of 2016 that are frequently touched by passengers. Viruses were found on 10% of everything swabbed and most commonly on the plastic trays at security. Rhinovirus, which causes the common cold, was the virus that was most frequently picked up in the tests. The swabs also detected the bacteria that causes the flu. The study says what your mom always says. If you're coughing, do so into your hands and then wash them. That's the key to containing contagious illnesses and not passing them on. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, an unnamed senior Trump official says members of the administration are working to frustrate parts of the president's agenda to protect the country from his worst inclinations. In a New York Times editorial, the author said President Trump's immorality and impulsiveness had led to ill-informed and reckless decisions. Trump labeled the anonymous writer gutless and the newspaper as phony. Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey.
The alarming part of the op-ed is that there's someone in the White House who is very afraid that our nation is being damaged on a daily basis.
The author says that she isn't a liberal operative and agrees with many of the policy goals the administration is pursuing, but that those goals are being achieved in spite of and not because of the president. Brett Kavanaugh, President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, embraced judicial independence but sidestepped Senate Democrats' questions on whether a president can pardon himself or fire a prosecutor investigating him.
I base my decisions on the law, but I do so with an awareness of the facts and an awareness of the real world consequences, and I've not lived in a bubble.
Kavanaugh faced a grueling session of more than 12 hours of questioning. Senators pressed the conservative federal appeals court judge on his views about presidential power, abortion, gun rights, and race issues. An explosive wildfire has closed down dozens of miles of a major California freeway only weeks after a nearby blaze that left neighborhoods in ruins and killed eight people. The Delta Fire erupted yesterday afternoon and within hours had devoured nearly 8 square miles of timber and brush on both sides of Interstate 5 near the Oregon state line. India's top court today struck down a colonial-era law that made homosexual acts punishable by up to 10 years in in prison, a landmark victory for gay rights in the world's largest democracy. The justices ruled that the law was a weapon used to harass members of India's gay community and resulted in discrimination. GOAT, the abbreviation for greatest of all time, and TLDR, which stands for too long, didn't read, are just two of the 839 new words and terms that have been added to the Merriam-Webster's online dictionary. Others include biohacking, bingeable, and medical marijuana.
I did not know TLDR.
I did not either.
I've not seen that one.
It sounds like something I could use.
Yeah, especially now that Twitter is 280 characters. Right. Whoa, way too long for my short attention span. GOAT, by the way, has really done a 180 in sports, hasn't it?
Oh, it's awesome.
Used to be you were the worst person, and now you're
the best.
You're the greatest. Thanks, Jen. She will read the 830 other words in the coming hours. It's 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for joining us. With the NFL season set to kick off, the New England Patriots and Philadelphia Eagles are the early favorites to make it back to the Super Bowl, but the Wall Street Journal says fantasy football players appear to favor another team, the New Orleans Saints. With an average total of 9 players drafted by owners in high-stakes leagues, the Saints are the team with the most players represented in drafts conducted in the past few weeks for the National Fantasy Football Championship. With fantasy football placing an emphasis on skill position players on offense, New Orleans is the go-to team this season, with a roster that includes running back Alvin Kamara, who has an average draft position of number 5 overall, followed by quarterback Drew Brees, receiver Michael Thomas, running back Mark Ingram, and receiver Cameron Meredith. Next on the list, Buccaneers, Patriots, and Packers. Worst, Jets, Bills, and Cardinals. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.